You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But I love eating people. I love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. Seeing a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast.
Ooh.
I am the great and powerful mystery.
And I'm Jay Clone with a hint of salt and garlic seasoning.
Interesting. You guys are listening to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. Thank you for joining us.
I don't know.
What was so funny?
I don't know. I'm just got a hint.
If you guys want to send us anything, our P.O. Box is P.O. Box 75, Ada, and that's ADA, Ohio, 45810.
It's in the description below, and we like receiving letters and whatever else you'd enjoy sending us.
We get
us.
All kinds of awesome stuff, so please, yes. If you want to send us stuff, that's where to go. Also, we have Patreon. If you want to join Patreon, you get extra content. We actually are starting a D&D campaign through Patreon right now.
I think starting, well, soon.
Yeah, as of when this comes out, I think it's already kind of, the ball's kind of rolling. But anybody can join and jump in.
Right, you can be part of the campaign or listen along or, yeah, because we'll probably release those. You can hear those as we're recording them.
Yeah.
Because who knows when those will actually come out.
Yeah. Live shows, we have one with Michael in June. Tickets are still available below if you want to come out and hear live show, Sea Monsters and UFOs.
Yep. June 14th at Ada, Ohio, our hometown.
Yeah.
Come check us out.
We're speakers at the Hocking Hills Bigfoot Festival and Squonkapalooza so far this year.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those are in August, the first and second weekend of August. So come on, hang out with us. I think that's all the stuff I did really quick. Just wanted to, I haven't done one of those in a while. So I wanted to.
Yeah, that's our upcoming public speaking event. So there's your opportunity to come hang out with us.
So this episode, Ghost of Empires.
Ooh, okay.
Got any guesses what it's about?
Ghosts of Empires. I would say like past civilizations.
Yeah.
That reign supreme and whatever leftovers are remain of their existence. Is that what we're going to talk about?
No.
Oh, damn. Ghosts of Empires. I don't know. The Empire Strikes Back.
Good guess.
Okay. No. Then I'm out.
Okay. This is inspired from a recent video that I can never say his last name, but Forrest Galante.
Yeah.
Done.
I think it's right. Forrest Galante, yeah.
Yeah. And I actually sent it to you.
Yes, you did. And I actually seen it, I think, probably before you did.
I don't know. Maybe.
Well, I'm just saying it was weird. Like, you sent me a video about animals and stuff that I was like, I actually seen this.
So this episode's inspired from that.
Okay.
We're going to talk about, like, kind of a mix between Lazarus taxa, extinct species that may be out there, and their connections with cryptids.
Okay.
So a lot of these animals went extinct within the last 100 to 150 years.
Mm-hmm.
So populations don't really know about them. So when they start coming back, or if they're still out there, one or two, you know, just a handful of them are left.
Yeah.
They become cryptids. They become monsters.
Right, yeah.
So the first one we're going to talk about is the Mexican grizzly bear.
Ooh, okay.
What?
This is an interesting one.
Yeah. The Mexican grizzly bear is an extinct subspecies of brown bear, Ursus arceus. Some accounts suggest they were found in large numbers all the way up into the early 1900s in their native range. It was one of the biggest and largest mammals ever found in Mexico. And in 1982, the IUCN, the International Union of Conservation of Nature, so that's the red list,
mm-hmm.
released a paper declaring the Mexican grizzly bear as extinct.
So gone.
So just because a species is listed as extinct does not mean that every one of them is gone. We kind of talk about it like functionally extinct, where there's still maybe a handful of these creatures out there.
But basically what you're saying is they're extinct to a point where there's not enough to have a breeding population.
The IUCN.
To come back.
Declared that, yes.
Right.
That there's no...
When they say it's extinct, that's yes. what they mean.
So the Mexican grizzly bear was smaller than their counterparts found in America and Canada. Also known as the golden grizzly bear, or golden, you know, kind of golden brown in color.
Mm-hmm.
Mexican grizzlies had a silver fur varying from grayish white.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Some specimens were reddish and even yellowish brown. Their longest furs were present on their flanks and in their throat, while the fur was not dense on their belly and underpits, like a lot of the northern counterparts of the subspecies. So, yeah, they were kind of designed a little different. They looked physically a little different than the northern versions. So brown bears have a huge range, and that's why they're broken into so many subspecies.
Okay, so these guys are still related to them, like, very closely?
Yeah.
Just a different subspecies?
So, and when we talk about speciation, you kind of run that brown bears, so there's, like, everything from Arabian brown bears.
To Kodiak.
The Kodiaks, yeah. To these Mexican grizzlies, where if you put them all, they can breed. They can produce viable offspring.
Yeah.
They are still genetically close enough to be called subspecies, when others would argue that they're genetically different enough to, though, would be called new species.
Are all brown bears grizzly bears?
Yes, no.
So it's like turtle tortoise thing?
Yeah. Well, grizzlies are a subset of brown bears.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Regional brown bear.
So all grizzlies are brown bears?
Yes.
Okay, but not all brown bears are grizzlies.
Right.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. But yeah, their distribution. These Mexican grizzly bears were found in parts of the United States and Mexico. In Mexico, they inhabited the states of Baja, Sonora, and Cholula, is that how you say that one?
I think so.
I think it's Cholula. United States, they are found in New Mexico and Arizona pretty much exclusively.
Okay.
Their extinction. So this is one. Why would you think a grizzly bear in Mexico and the very southern part of the U.S. would go extinct?
Food.
What do you mean?
There's not enough food.
Oh, so they just, like, they starved out.
Oh, you mean, like, why would they have gone extinct?
Yeah, what drove these guys to extinction?
Oh, probably us expanding that way.
I don't know. You mean...
European men expanding west.
So these guys were known to be trapped, poisoned, and shot on sight by farmers.
Oh, nice. Okay, fair.
Their native range in Mexico decreased just three isolated mountains.
Mm.
So they were pushed to the tops of these mountains extremely quickly.
Okay.
The Coro Campus, the Santa Clara, and the Sonora de Nado, I think, mountains.
Okay.
The Mexican grizzly bear became extremely rare by the 1930s. Believed to just have 30 specimens left by the 1960s.
That's so fast.
And it was believed by 1964 that no population of the subspecies was left.
Hmm. Well, that was a quick one. We found them, pushed them out, and wiped them out.
The population in the southwest United States vanished by 1930 completely, earlier.
Overnight, basically.
If not earlier. They were pushed to the top of these mountains, and it's just because people really don't want to live there. They say same thing. So we're going to do some honorable mentions, but we're going to kind of skip over them because we have full episodes on them.
Okay.
So, like, the Trilocene.
Yeah.
Similar thing. They got blamed
For killing all the goats or what is it?
Sheep.
Sheep, that's what it was.
And so they put a bounty on him, wiped him out, and it was the dingo doing it, not the trilocene.
So yeah, because after they killed them all, oh, their sheep were still dying.
So that's why these guys kind of got blamed. They were scary, you know, they were big and scary bears. The reason there's no grizzly bears in California, and even though it's on their flag.
I was going to say, yeah, and that there's...
Because they were scary, so they killed every one of them. And I do think that may be kind of false now. I think they're at the coming into the northern top, like the northern tip of California.
They're coming back?
A little bit. Up in the mountains and stuff like that. So these guys had a similar fate, where livestock farmers were blaming them for livestock deaths, just killing them, poisoning them, literally leaving gut piles out with tons and tons of poison in it.
Oh, ethical.
And, you know, yeah, they'd feed it to their cubs and whatever, and then they'd all die. Let's talk about sightings and search efforts. The last confirmed sighting came from the Cerro de Nido Mountains, and that's central Cholula in Mexico in the late 1950s. In 1964, there was an unconfirmed report of a grizzly bear poisonings in the same region. So after they were declared extinct, there were still people
poisoning them.
Yeah. So they may have still been there. Unconfirmed sightings reported still came in up until the 1968. After reports of some surviving individuals on a ranch in the Sonora state in 1968, Dr. Carl B. Conford, an American biologist, conducted a 3-month-long research and ended in vain. He said he got close.
Never found
what he believed were tracks.
Okay, so some evidence, signs of life, yeah. But...
Keep in mind, any of these guys that were left by this point...
Probably
were terrified of
humans, yeah.
Terrified.
So they're going to hide.
Yeah. Some experts still believe they are out there.
Well, I mean, they only went extinct not even 100 years ago.
And I actually have some, I get a little bit more info on them of actual sightings and stuff like
that. Okay.
But some interesting facts about them. Females give birth to 1 to 3 cubs every 3 years.
Oh, okay.
So a very slow process.
Yep.
The first Europeans came in contact with the Mexican grizzly bear were their explorers in the 16th century, Ernesto Vasquez de Canardo started his journey in 1540 to find the 7 cities of gold.
The Road to El Dorado. Mm-hmm.
Farmers and ranchers considered Mexican grizzly bears as a pest as the mammals killed their cattle from time to time. In the reports in 1960, Mexican ranchers reportedly started a campaign to completely eradicate the species for killing his cattle. So there's probably
typical one... typical human response.
There's one guy... that is probably responsible for the ending of this species.
Yeah.
If it is ended.
That's what's going to happen to all these Canadian geese here soon.
Yeah, gosh. You should guys check out DW last week.
Yeah.
DW Conspiracy Check. So as ranchers and owners pushed into the northern territories of Mexico starting in the late 1600s, humans and bear conflicts became more and more frequent. The ranchers claimed that the Mexican grizzlies were killing their livestock, and sometimes whole villages would go on the hunt and track down and kill one bear.
Jeez. Bit of overkill.
They really didn't like these bears.
Clearly, you think?
By the late 1800s, there were a few grizzly bears left in the wild. They became sought after by American trophy hunters.
I mean, I get that. It's a unique bear.
The last documented...
it's just what we do.
Mexican grizzly bear in Baja was killed in 1899. And by the 1930s, there were said to only be a few dozen of the bears left in the world.
Mm.
And all of them were in, you know, those couple mountain ranges we already mentioned. Although technically protected, the bears were still trapped, shot, and poisoned all the way through the 1960s. By the mid-1960s, wildlife officers in Mexico proclaimed that the Mexican grizzly bear was extinct. Rumors of the bear's continued existence persisted, however. And during the 1968, we already talked about the biologist. He went on a 49-day expedition to find the elusive creatures. He found no bears. He did find what they believe may have been footprints and stuff from them, but they weren't confirmed.
Yeah.
In the spring and the fall of 1974, Audrey Stephen Johnson, a Southwest representative of the American organization called the Defenders of Wildlife, also surveyed the mountains. Johnson searched for 6 weeks and found no evidence of grizzly bears. Perhaps they were looking in the wrong places. In 1976, a rancher in Sonora shot a Mexican grizzly bear in a place aptly named Oro El Oso. In English, it means the bear stream.
Oh.
Located about 50 miles south of the U.S.-Mexican border in the town of Lamos. The habitats was mixed pines and oak woodlands, and the bear was shot while feeding on a mountain lion kill. That's grizzly bears are kind of famous for pushing other animals off their kills.
opportunistic scavengers.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they'll push other predators off their kills. Mm-hmm. They're just bigger and meaner. Right. They're just not, you know, so mountain lion knows it's not really worth the fight.
No, they'll just pick up what he leaves behind.
This location was a few hundred miles from the mountains in the Chalua, where they had some intentions and rediscoverings had been focused on. Although rumors in 1976 bear had been shot existed throughout the years, the skull of the bear was the only researched in the year of 2005. Investigators concluded that the bear was young, which may have indicated that their parents and or siblings could still be alive all the way into the mid-70s. The bear had siblings. Biologists believe they could have been Mexican grizzly bears living in the area at least through the mid-1980s. If not, maybe the early 1990s.
Well, if he wasn't fully developed, I mean, at least
he was young. Yeah, he was very young.
He could have lived that long.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. That
before he got shot.
Saying if they have siblings.
Right,
if mom and dad produced more offspring beside him,
right,
there's a chance that he made it all the way, or that they would have made it all the way up into the early 90s.
Right, that's crazy.
No one did follow up on the rumors of the 1976 shooting at the time, so researchers still focused on the mountain range about 50 miles north of this area. The dense wilderness where the last handful of bears were spotted in the 1950s. So there's a chance that these guys were all just looking in the wrong area.
Right, yeah.
They went to where the last confirmed ones were.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where this one was shot was 50 miles south of it.
I thought you said 100 even, or off the rip.
Oh, maybe I did.
I think it was 100 miles from that Chalua mountain range or whatever.
Yeah, so there's a chance that everybody's just looking in the wrong spot.
Right, yeah.
I mean, we talked about that with the Trans Alps Giant Salamander. You know,
original habitat.
Yeah, is gone. So going looking there is pointless.
Right, yeah.
Because it's a lake now when it used to be a stream.
Exactly.
But yeah. So in the May of 1979, a part of a cooperative agreement between the U.S. and the Mexican government to investigate the status of the Mexican grizzly bear. The University of Montana Bordered Grizzly Bear Project conducted an extensive on-site investigation and live trapping program. The project spent 51 days on the eastern slopes of these mountains. One of the snares was disturbed by what appeared to be a small bear, and the animal left tracks behind. The researchers on the expedition not only found claw marks on trees, they found fur beside scratching posts, and they saw two bears in the distance through binoculars.
Ah.
While they went to the location of their sightings, they found no paw prints, claw marks, and any tangible evidence of what they saw. But the visual evidence proved to be enough that the bear still existed at the time.
Hmm.
So already pushing 20 years past the quote-unquote expiration date of the species.
Right, yeah. That there's signs and evidence to still be in there.
Yeah, I mean, these group of biologists, I'm going to assume they're credible.
Yeah.
But there's always that chance that they just want them to be so bad and get protection that they would lie.
They've seen these trees off in the distance through their binoculars, and they're like, those are bear-shaped.
But I'm also saying they ran the Montana Border Grizzly Bear Project.
Gotcha. So they're pretty qualified.
That or they were really wanting there to be grizzly bears.
Okay.
Or they really believe they're out there and they want them to get protection. Right. Because we've talked about that. There's no protection for extinct species.
Nope, not at all.
So, you know, if you get that decision reversed, then you get your legal protections back. Mm-hmm. So one of the stairs was disturbed, which I thought was interesting. They went to the location, found no sightings. Charles Jonkel of the University of Montana School of Forestry and his Mexican counterpart, Jose Tuervo, the director of forestry fauna in the state of Chalua, published a paper in 1980, summarized their findings in the May 79 expedition to find the bears. The two wrote this as a part of the paper concluding remarks. So I just have a little list of their thing, just to water it down, I guess.
Okay.
We concur that the Mexican grizzly bear may still exist in Mexico. We base our conclusions on the following key points. Brown bear populations elsewhere demonstrate the special ability to remain viable even through isolated and low population levels. 2, the longevity of grizzly bears, 20 to 25 years in the wild, and the relatively recent records of grizzly bears in Mexico meant that a few survivors could still exist and may have a viable population if it's not present. 3, because of their remarkable ability to use cover, grizzly bears could survive without being detected. 4, several likely areas of grizzly bears in Mexico's have not been studied whatsoever.
Well, they're saying something.
5, grizzly bear habitat is adequate and abundant in these parts of Mexico.
And there's nobody studying it.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's just kind of, like I said, the paper is absolutely massive.
Yeah.
So that was like the watering it down.
Uh-huh.
And you actually go to it and look it up. Forrest Galante did one of these too, where despite he is a big believer that they're still out there. In December 2019, wildlife biologist Forrest Galante from Animal Planet's Extinct or Alive appeared and talked about this. Galante said that it was possible a small population of these bears were still alive, what the biologists call sky islands. These are isolated habitats in the High Sierra Mountains of northern Mexico. The possible existence of these extinct bears is strange, Galante stated. The researchers are not interested in pursuing them.
That makes sense. Yeah. Why would they? There's no money in there for them.
Yeah. So it's interesting. The areas, and there is actually a modern day footprint.
Ooh, they got a track?
Yeah, you can actually look this up, a picture of it.
Okay.
From the last 10 years.
Okay.
Some hiker up, way up, found it. It looks, I mean, it's a bear print. Whether it was where he said he took it or not, you know, I'd have no.
That's one question.
It is a bear print.
Okay. It's like that someone just shared recently in our Facebook group, that picture of that hyena.
Oh, yeah.
And they said it was in West Virginia, or at least that article did. And
yes.
They asked for clarity. And our awesome group immediately found out it was a picture of a hyena, a guy shot in Africa.
Yeah.
But there's people changing the captions of West Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Which there are hyenas in West Virginia, just not that one.
Not that one.
But no, so I think they're still there.
Yeah,
me too. I think the habitat's still there. I think as far as we talk about with animals on the show, grizzly bears are one of the most adaptable, tough things on the planet.
Yeah.
And like we've talked about with the Trilocene and other animals, that they get driven to almost extinction by a new predator. The ones that survive are skittish, like the rattlesnakes in Texas that no longer rattle.
Right, yeah.
So this population now, like the researchers may have experienced, if a person gets within 2 miles of them, they're gone.
Yep.
They're not letting you. They smell so, their sense of smell is so much heightened than ours. They know when you're there.
Oh, yeah. Miles.
Mm-hmm. So they may just always keep pushing away. And so when the researchers set up for 51 days, you know, they found scratches, they found footprints, they had a snare go off.
Mm.
It appeared to be, a small bear was stuck in it and got out. So they had evidence for them.
So something small, maybe curious enough to at least get close.
Yeah, or just wasn't big enough to get caught.
Right, that too,
because they're purposely live, like non-harm traps.
Yeah.
So there's other sets of snares you can set that they were not going to get out of, but they're going to lose their leg if they live.
Right, exactly, yeah. And with an extinct species, you don't want that to
happen. No, they were just trying to just prove they existed.
Right, exactly.
So I think they're still out there.
I'm with you. And with them saying that it's got the habitat that's not regularly explored or studied at all, I mean, for looking for them.
And there's right now, there is a monster in a different mountain range in Mexico.
Okay.
It is killing local cattle.
Uh-oh.
And it's about 200 miles from where these guys were. It's a different mountain.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of these.
Could be.
I think it's a young male coming down out of the mountains looking for new territory.
Right, yeah.
Probably the first time in, decades that they've encountered cattle.
Right, and then have the generational...
the fear.
Right, or he's stubborn enough to not listen to it.
Yeah. So there is a monster currently going on right now in this small village in Mexico killing cattle.
Ooh.
And I'm pretty sure it's a Mexican grizzly bear.
Well, we'll do a follow-up on that in the future.
That's it. Like I said, that's pretty much all the stuff is that local wildlife officers are looking into the mysterious deaths of this cattle in this little village.
I bet you there'll be more to follow up on.
I've seen people say dog man and all that stuff. And yeah. I'm 99% sure it was a Mexican grizzly bear.
Yeah. Especially if you don't know they're there. I mean, it's an extinct animal.
They're very, and if they're skittish and shy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my first one.
That's a good one.
Next one, we're going to do just an honorable mention.
Oh, okay.
Because they talked about this in that video we talked about. Stellar sea cows.
Yep, stellar sea cow.
We have an episode about it.
Yep.
An hour and a half-ish long.
Just search our channel, whatever. Stellar sea cow.
I believe they're out there.
Colossal said they're bringing them back.
They're on Colossal's list. Oh, my gosh.
Which is ridiculous. Listen to our episodes on Colossal. That's on our Patreon.
They're both on Patreon.
If you want to know what we think about Colossal.
It's not good.
It's not good, but if you want to know the deets, follow us on Patreon. Or subscribe, I guess.
Next one, we've talked about in the show tangentially before, but never really did a full dive in it, I don't believe. The ivory-billed woodpecker.
Yeah, yep. I think we did,
or did
a
we do
freaky fauna episode on them, maybe?
I can't remember.
We did talk about them a little bit.
And I actually have brand new, news about these guys good. Right now.
An updated version, okay.
Right, like right now, which is crazy to me.
Off the presses. Hot breaking the presses. News.
So we'll do this one, then we'll take our ad break.
All right.
The largest of the woodpeckers in the north of Mexico and the third largest woodpecker in the world, the ivory-billed woodpecker of old growth forest in the southeastern United States and Cuba. Destruction to its forest habitat caused several population declines in the 1800s, with only very small numbers of individuals surviving to the 20th century. It was thought to have gone extinct in the middle of the 20th century. The bird was rediscovered in the Big Woods region of central Arkansas in 2004. And has not been relocated since. So that's where that story is right now.
The last.
Yeah, we talked about that. The kayaker, the biologist that had seen one, and he has a picture of one.
Yep.
And nobody believes him. But we'll talk about it.
Yes.
So just some cool facts about ivory-billed woodpeckers. From 2006 to 2010, the Cornell Lab of Ornithology was involved in attempts to relocate the ivory-billed woodpeckers in the southeastern United States after a number of sightings began to pour in from Arkansas in 2004. The ivory-billed woodpecker is often thought to be a swamp dweller, but biologist Jim Tanner had a different view on it. It has been associated with muck and murk. It isn't called the melancholy bird, but it's not that at all. The ivory-billed woodpecker is the dweller of treetops and sunshine. It lives in the sun, not in the shade. Just a thought. Mm. I think that they're swamp animals, but that's just me.
Well, what do they eat?
Swamp animals.
Oh, so there you go.
No, I mean, they're woodpeckers, so they pound on wood to get animals out of the wood. Native Americans used ivory-billed woodpecker bills for decoration. The thriving bill trade existed across much of North America, so much so that archaeologists uncover ivory-billed woodpecker skulls far, far outside of their native range.
That's pretty awesome.
The ivory-billed woodpecker in Cuba had a slightly smaller bill and a wider neck stripe and extended further into the face than those in North American states, leading some to consider it maybe a separate species or a subspecies. The Cuban bird suffered the same fate, though, as their mainland counterparts, disappearing as mature forests were destroyed. The last confirmed sighting in Cuba was 1986.
Oh.
Sadly, the ivory-billed woodpecker isn't the only large North American woodpecker to have succumbed to habitat loss. Mexico's imperial woodpecker, the largest in the world, has not been seen since the 1950s.
Oh, that's been quite a while. Okay.
And in 2010, a search for the imperial woodpecker in the pine forests of the Sierra Mardas did not produce any sightings or any credible secondary sight stuff.
Ooh.
The bird is not known only from museum specimens and short segments from restored film footage in the 1950s.
I'm going to have to look up this imperial woodpecker.
It looks very similar to the ivory bill.
Just bigger?
Yeah.
Okay, that's pretty awesome, though. How do they know the one they saw wasn't a smaller imperial?
What do you mean?
The ivory-billed woodpecker, are they?
Different range, different habitat.
You know, birds can show up anywhere.
Yeah, I know. All right, put your phone down and listen to this.
Oh, look at this. I'm looking at the woodpecker. That's pretty cool.
So late last year.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
A Pennsylvanian-based research lab rediscovered the extinct ivory-billed woodpecker.
Ooh, where'd they see it?
So I'm just going to read you this article.
Okay.
The ivory-billed woodpecker, long thought extinct, have been found alive and well, at least a few, by their very own Pennsylvania, Steve Latta. And there's actually a colored picture of one of these guys. The largest woodpecker in North America, the ivory-billed woodpecker, historically ranged in the Carolinas to Texas and the Mississippi River, all the way into the lower Ohio River basin.
Nice.
So it probably didn't come up into Ohio, but there's that chance that maybe every once in a while.
A storm system blew him up here.
Yeah. It was last seen, you know, 1944 in Louisiana. Traits in Virginia bottomlands forest was cut. Since then, sporadic reports of the Lord God bird, named after a response of people seeing one nearby, had resurfaced, and no credible evidence of the photos or physical remains had been produced. Then 2 decades ago, various organizations by Tim Gallagher, editor of Living Birds magazine, some backwoodsmen, and a local college professor had taken it seriously. The Cornell University Laboratory sent a field team to the White River site in Arkansas to attempt further documentation. Despite careful analysis of the best photo obtained and testimony of knowledgeable ornithological students, the bird's existence was still not widely accepted by the scientific community.
Still?
I'm still going. Gallagher's popular book about his experiences chasing the bird called The Grail Bird were published in 2006. The ivory-billed woodpecker was indeed the holy grail of rare North American birds, and the wish list right there at the top of most North American birders. 20 inches long with a 30-inch wingspan, it is among the largest woodpeckers in the world. The genus Campervalius, which means grub lover.
Huh.
Only the imperial woodpecker in Mexico, now probably also extinct, and the Western Hemisphere woodpeckers are larger. The nearly as large pileated woodpecker of North America is similar looking to its relatively common throughout the United States. His bird is usually seen, hopeful observers of the ivory-billed woodpecker. Feet and claws of the ivory-billed woodpecker are much larger than the pileated. If so, you would not want to mistake by either bird if a grub landed on your head.
Fair.
Enter Steve Latta. Steve served with the author of this article 2 decades ago in the ornithological community in the Pennsylvania Bird Surveys, which advertised state natural agencies and the species in their jurisdiction. Lead conservation of the National Aviary in Pittsburgh, Steve became interested in the plight of the nearly extinct ivory-billed woodpecker and acquired funding to go look and obtain evidence of it. After a 10-year effort, he had done that. His peer-reviewed paper with 9 co-authors published last year, so this would have been early 2024.
Okay.
In the Scientific Journal of Ecology and Evolution, and you can look up the link for that, provides trail camera sound recordings and video evidence using drones and multiple individuals of ivory-billed woodpeckers in an undisclosed forested site.
Wow. So we got some.
Colorful close-up photos of these birds with many slick birding and wildlife magazines were not obtained by the research team, but field marks and behaviors and identified in these birds, such as black landings and white tailing feathers featured in the flight and large white saddles, triangular in the perching birds, were obtained. Why have close-up photos of the bird not been obtained in the 8 decades since the last, last time the bird was documented? Mm-hmm. Two possibilities. The nearly extinct bird has only survived the chainsaws, shotguns, and human distributions, and stayed far, far away from man as possible, like we've already talked about. The habituation, the anti-habituation, staying away from people. People are bad.
Right.
And trying to canoe through their primary habitat, mosquito-infested swamps with shallow water obstacles, requiring frequent forwards while carrying heavy camera equipment to get a weary bird to take flight suddenly encountered. The decades-long research effort led by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to identify proposed plans to declare the bird extinct and remove it from the endangered species list. So basically, Steve Latta and his team advanced the conservation effort from a magnification icon of the Southeastern River Bottoms Forest. So you can look this up. This is still being fought over right now.
What's being fought over?
The DNR wants to declare it extinct.
Right.
Because they don't want to offer it any protection.
Even though he's found...
Yeah, there's a bunch of them living out there.
Yeah.
Using drones and all these trail camera footage and stuff like that.
Is that how he got
the
pictures? Yeah. Okay.
Because you can't get close to them.
Right.
And their habitat sucks for people.
Right. And mosquito infested. It sounds like a very intense level of Pokemon Snap.
So there's a bunch of people a bunch of high-level ornithologists that say, yes, he found it. Yes, it's back.
Mm-hmm.
It never went extinct. It's been hiding there.
Guess who's back?
Yeah, ivory-billed woodpecker.
Didn't roll off the tongue.
It's a hard name.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're back. They found them.
They found them back. It's last year. Breaking news.
Yeah, so I mean, literally, look it up, everybody at home, because the photos of them, I'm a believer that the DNR does this a lot. Whoa. With a lot of endangered species.
What do you mean you're a believer in, you're a believer in what?
That they did find them, that these are real.
Right. I mean, what are they, Photoshop photos?
Or they say pileated woodpeckers with odd markings.
Oh, okay. They're just saying it's these other ones.
Yeah, because they've been trying, these certain organizations have been trying to get it put as the extinct list.
Right.
So they can clear cut more forests faster.
Right. So, yeah, they're not there to really protect the animals or the forest or anything.
Now, listen to last week's DW.
They're just there to be a buffer for the corporations to do whatever they want to do. Interesting.
So, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's awesome. I think they're back. I think they need protection. And I like woodpeckers. Just the way they fly.
They're really awesome birds. No,
they're super unique.
I think Ohio has like 10 or 12 species of them.
Really?
Yeah.
We usually have a couple that hang around our house.
Yeah, I've only seen a pileated a handful of times.
Which one's that?
They're massive. You won't mistake them.
Oh, okay.
That's the one that's not as big as the ivory billed, but pretty close.
Okay. Just big one with the red feathers on its head, like most of them have.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I've seen one or not. I don't know. Couldn't tell you.
I mean, they're huge. Yeah. You wouldn't mistake it. They're like the size of a Stanley mug.
Okay. I mean.
You would know if you've seen one.
Yeah. But I just like how they fly. They fly different than every other bird. Mm-hmm. And the way they land on the side of
trees.
Land on side of trees or the side of telephone poles. Just the way they do it. It's awesome. Woodpeckers are cool little birds, and I don't want to see them all go away.
All right. We're going to take our ad break, and we're coming back with more mysterious animals.
All right. Let's get some garlic dust on some woodpecker wings.
Oh, it's not even that one.
Oh.
That's a Bigfoot. It's a whole different Bigfoot game.
Oh, okay.
Well, things are looking good for the Jamboree this year so far.
True, but I wonder if there's anything else that can make this event even more awesomer.
Well, there's really only one person that could be the judge of that.
Hey, that's a great idea. Let's give him a call.
Two Whoops and Tree Knocks. Sasquatch is there.
Hey guys, what's up?
Well, we're going over the schedule for the Jamboree, but we wanted to see what you think.
All right, well, let me take a look here real fast. Okay, so the VIP tickets are $50 a piece, and that gets you into the Friday night dinner and meet and greet with the speakers and special guests. Monster costume contest? Well, that looks good. A free family room with activities for the kids? Well, that's outstanding. A Bigfoot calling contest. Of course, it looks like you're going to have a lot of food. Oh, good, and you'll have the craft vendors back. Last year, I actually found a Squatchtopus. Well, let's see who the speakers are this year. Oh, you have Connor and Alexis Fiden, and Randy Bauer, Ron Murphy, outstanding. Oh good, you guys will be speaking. Which J-Clone is going to be there? That's my question. And Tony Merkel as well. Oh good, you're going to have Jake Dressel back. He was excellent last year. And Brian Wolf. Why does that name sound familiar? Well, I have to tell you, gentlemen, having gone to a number of these events, this looks like it's going to be one of the best ones of the year. Say, will Tiny Toes be there?
Tiny Toes?
Yeah, the little guy that was there last year.
Oh, you mean Paul.
Yep. Tiny Toes will be there as well.
Tiny Toes.
Cool. Well, this all sounds fantastic, guys. And I look forward to seeing you there. Until then, Squatch Dust!
Bye!
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Now, I wouldn't eat a the Mexican grizzly bear, and I wouldn't eat a ivory-billed woodpecker. But if I had to, I'd eat them with a little bit of Bigfoot breath. Flavors of the Forest, Bigfoot breath. Get it at flavorsforest.com/corn. Get your discount code. It's the best garlic dust on the market, and I eat it with about all my meals at home that I cook at home. Every single one of them's got Flavors of the Forest. One of the flavors put in it for sure. So that's Flavors of the Forest. .com or flavorsforest.com/corn.
There you go. Next one. Monculus tropicalis.
Okay.
The Caribbean monk seal.
Oh, a monk seal. Mm-hmm. I was thinking a monkey.
No. The Caribbean monk seal, also known as the West Indian seal or the sea wolf,
ooh,
is an extinct species of seal native to the Caribbean. The main natural predators of the Caribbean monk seal were large sharks such as great whites and tigers, and possibly transient orcas, though killer whales were not often seen in the Caribbean. However, humans would become their most lethal enemy. Overhunting of the monk seals for oil and meat, as well as overfishing of their natural prey, were all combined to be the reason for the supposed extinction of these guys.
Okay.
The last confirmed sighting of the Caribbean monk seal was in 1952 at Strilla Bank, in the waters west of Jamaica and off the east coast. In 2008, a species was officially declared extinct in the United States after an exhaustive five-year search. The analysis was conducted at the National Marine Fisheries Service and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. The Caribbean monk seal is closely related to the endangered Hawaiian monk seal, a species in which is restricted to the central Pacific islands around the Hawaiian Islands, the Mediterranean, and also the Mediterranean monk seal, another vulnerable species off the coast of Greece.
Sea wolf.
Yeah, so they got called that because when European settlers came to the area,
yeah,
they were like wolves. So like they started calling them sea wolves.
That's crazy. That would be probably one of the more terrifying ways to go is if a pack of monk seals were attacking you in the water.
Yeah.
I'd rather have one big orca get me.
Yeah, I don't want to be ripped apart by a sea wolf.
Not by sea wolves, no.
So, extinction. Through the first half of the 20th century, Caribbean monk seals were sightings were much rarer. In 1908, a small group of seals were seen off the Bristling Tunga Islands. Fishermen captured six seals in 1915 when they were sent to Pensacola, Florida, and were eventually released there. A seal was killed near Key West, Florida in March of 1922. There were sightings of Caribbean monk seals on the Texas coast in both 1926 and 1932. The last seal recorded to be killed by humans was killed in Pardo Cays in 1939. Two more seals were seen in the Drunken Man's Cay in South Kingston, Jamaica, in November of 1949. And in 1952, the Caribbean monk seal was confirmed sighted for the last time at the Estrella Bank. Final extinction of the Caribbean monk seal was triggered by the two major factors. The most viable factor contributing to the Caribbean monk seal's demise was the nonstop hunting and killing of the seals in the 18th and 19th century to obtain their oil, which we talked about that in one of our an episode about whaling.
That they went to seals?
Yeah.
Yeah.
After they kill all the whales, else burns?
Right. What else can we melt down and burn?
That thing looks like it's flammable. Get them.
Mm.
So, yeah. So they held oil within their blubber. The unsustainable demand for seal products in the Caribbean encountered hundreds to slaughter the Caribbean monk seal by the hundreds in some cases.
Wonderful.
The Caribbean monk seal's docile nature and the extreme lack of flight instinct in the presence of humans made them easy to kill. So why these guys were killed over a lot of the other seal species that were in the area is that they were extremely docile and they would let people like come up and touch them and stuff like that.
Mm, so they're friendly.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd go friendly, but they weren't scared of people and they weren't aggressive towards people.
Right, yeah.
So they literally come up with like the whaling sticks
and just stab them.
Start stabbing them to death.
That's not smart.
Well, they died easy. The second factor was overfishing of the reefs to sustain the Caribbean monk seals population.
Hmm.
They were basically getting destroyed on two fronts. A lot of them were being killed on the beach, and when they would go out, there was no food. There was giant habitats and everything
changed.
Like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, Caribbean monk seal population, there were no fish or mollusks to feed on. The seals were not killed by hunters only for oil. They were died of starvation. So there was literally whole beaches of seals that died from starvation. Surprisingly, few conservation measures were taken forward to attempt to save the Caribbean monk seal. But by the time they were in place on the endangered species list in 1967, it's likely they were already extinct.
Already out the window.
Yeah.
Or out the door.
So unconfirmed sightings. The unconfirmed sightings of Caribbean monk seal by local fishermen and divers are relatively common in Haiti and Jamaica. But two recent scientific expeditions failed to find any signs of the animal. It is possible the mammals still exist, but some biologists strongly believe the sightings are probably that of wandering hooded seals, which have been positively identified on the archipelago, such as Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. On April 22nd of 2009, the History Channel aired an episode of Monster Quest, which hypothesized that an unidentified sea creature captured on videotape in the international coastways of Florida could possibly be the extinct Caribbean monk seal. If you guys haven't seen that episode of it, go look it up. It's pretty fascinating because a lot of people said it was a manatee.
Mm-hmm.
And I have mixed feelings about it. I don't really think it was a manatee.
Mm.
So it could be one of these guys. And like we've already talked about with all the other species on this list, when you're hunted to extinction or close to it, you get really eerie of people.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a recurring theme on this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, so they could be out there. They could be.
Oh, I 100% believe them. They're still out there. I just don't think. I think anything that's went, you know, extinct, quote unquote extinct, in the past 100 years, there's still
there's chances. There's always a chance.
In my mind, they're still living out there. They're, excuse me. Yes, they're correct. They are extinct as far as there's not a breeding population for them to come back and thrive like they once did. But if it's been the past 100 years that they're declared that, I still 100% will believe that they're still out there. And then the ocean being the second largest, most unexplored biome on Earth.
Next to
the atmosphere. Yeah. I just think that there's places for them to be that they can live where we're not disturbing them out, still out there. Like those unexplored or undiscovered grass fields we found out in the ocean just recently.
Oh, seagrass beds.
Yeah. Like, we just found them recently.
Yeah, the one the size of Ohio is out there.
Exactly. So, yeah, I 100% believe these guys are still out there, still thriving somewhere, just not in the usual spots where we murdered them all.
I could see it either way for these guys.
Yeah.
Because there have been hooded seals. Hooded seals are not native to the area.
Yeah.
But they end up there every once in a while.
Well, the niche
is
open.
I think, if I'm right, they're more native to, like, colder climates.
Okay.
But they follow the jet stream down there.
Every now and then you need a vacation spot.
Mm-hmm. They're the ones that have, they're not like elephant seals where they have the big nose on the front.
The proboscis.
But they do have a hood they inflate on top of their head. Hmm. Like, not on top of their head, but right in the front of their head.
Like a turkey?
It's the big red thing. Yeah.
Like a turkey?
Kinda.
Okay.
They don't fill it with blood necessarily. They fill it with air. The Malagasy hippopotamus.
Oh, wow. Malagasy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So
where's this guy supposed to take
several
place?
Species of Malagasy hippopotamus. Also known as the Malagasy pygmy hippos, or the Madagascaran pygmy hippos.
Oh, okay.
Which lived on the island of Madagascar, which are now believed to be extinct. The animals are very similar to the extinct extinct hippopotamus and pygmy hippos. The fossil record suggests that at least one species of them lived at least until 1,000 years ago. And other evidence suggests that the species may have survived until much more recently. The taxonomy of these animals is not resolved and is still widely studied. Basically where they fall in the family trees of hippos.
Gotcha.
The Malagasy hippopotamus was first described in the mid-19th century by Alfred Gardler, who unearthed nearly 50 individual hippos from a dried-up swamp in Lake Orthe, a few miles south of the Mozambique Channel. As many as 4 different species of hippopotamus were subsequently identified by various research. In careful revisions of the fossil record of the Malagasy hippo, Showing Shoes concluded that only 2 species of hippopotamus which were classified, Hippopotamus lemuri, Hippopotamus madagascarius. In 1990, Fern and Gordon discovered a distinct 3rd species of hippopotamus, Hippopotamus latimuria. In review of Stratton's work, Harris suggested that Hip madagascarius is much more common, while the extinct pygmy hippopotamus in West Africa.
Are these related to the
Hippopotamus.
Yeah, Hippopotamus.
Since the extinct pygmy hippo was placed in the genus Hyproxodons, he uses the name Hex madagascarus. Some taxonomists are still arguing this, basically just arguing over species of what, how many species of hippo were they?
Right.
Are the pygmy hippos from Africa the same pygmy hippos on Madagascar? Or are they a different species?
Right. They're quibbling.
Yeah. Although they're not well studied, the group accepts the 3 species of Malagasy hippos. It is also known where or and exactly how the hippos arrived on the Madagascar island. As hippos are semi-aquatic, it is possible they survived the nearly 250-mile trek across the channel. Although presumed, this is when the water in the area was very shallow.
Oh, the ocean was just shallower?
No, so Madagascar... the channel is a lot shallower than areas around it.
So back then it was even more shallow.
Or there's a chance that there was, so it's actually like land humps in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Islands may have eroded away.
Right.
So they may have island hopped their way out.
That would make more sense. Because I don't think they're walking along the,
keep in mind, we're talking about like those giant grass meadows.
Yeah.
So we're not talking about like, people have suggested that they swam to there. Like,
maybe
hippos don't swim.
Maybe their bone density was
different. They do not swim very well.
Floated. Maybe a hurricane carried them over.
Now, rafting is a whole different thing.
Right,
yeah. Because that does get mentioned.
Okay.
Where there's just a massive storm or flood, and they're just on a bunch of trees.
Maybe they're an old species of hippo there with the lemurs.
They glided over.
Yeah.
Before they were big, they used their skin flaps to fly.
Right, yeah.
So presumably the Maya were shallower, and they were hopping on islands along the way.
Prevailing westerlies.
It is possible that the three species of hippopotamus represented three distinct and successful migrations to the island. Uh-huh. So that's a thought that every so often, you know, thousands of years, a group of hippos would make it to the island and it would become a new species. Mm. Hippos are only endemic ungulates ever to have lived on Madagascar.
Oh, wow. Endemic meaning that...
found there.
Yeah, exactly.
So Hippopotamus madagascaris is the so-called Madagascar hippo or pygmy hippo, the species that was originally classified as hippopotamus along with the others, and the two species are roughly the same size. There was two different pygmy hippos in the area.
Living in Madagascar alone.
Yeah. The review of the morphology and habitat, however, suggests a close relationship to modern pygmy hippos for the latter one. Like modern pygmy hippos, the Madagascar pygmy hippo had its eyes on the side of its head rather than high orbitals and teeth of common hippopotamus. Madagascar hippo was similarly less aquatic. Basically, these were forest hippos.
Mm-hmm.
They're like highland forest. Mm. That's why they were smaller, they had more nimble feet, and their eyes were much more like normal ungulates on land, lower on their sides of their head.
Gotcha.
When common hippos, the African hippo, the big guy you think of, they have their eyes much higher on orbitals. They're huge. They're not very fat, and that's a misconception. They are giant things of muscle.
Gotcha.
They don't really have, they have thick skin, but they don't really have a lot of fat.
Okay.
They're really dense bones, and they're almost fully aquatic. They only go on land during the day to graze.
You're talking the regular hippos. Yes.
So there's very different. Pygmy hippos and common hippos, or the African hippo, are extremely different animals.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they studied demonstration Madagascar hippos and their counterparts, the tortoises, dietary habits. Basically, the tortoises were dominant grazers in Madagascar that the hippos followed. Madagascar hippos in general, however, were less grass specialists than the mainland African hippos. So these tortoises and these giant tortoises, the Aldabrillates of Madagascar and the Madagascar pygmy hippo, were in competition with each other. They had the same niche.
Oh, okay.
It was making me laugh just thinking of...
A tortoise and a hippo?
Yeah, that they're the same animal. They're doing the same job.
Right, competing for the same thing.
Yeah.
I always thought you were going to say, like, they work together or something, but nope.
So, like I said, limited fossil evidence of Madagascar or hippos. There's none really younger than 1,000 years.
Okay.
However, hippopotamus are surprisingly common in oral legends of the Malagasy. So that's the people.
Oh, okay.
So they have these hippos in their legends and lore. It's not like when they found like skulls of elephants and they made cyclops or whatever.
Yeah.
They talked like they look like hippos. Right. They know what a hippo looks like. So if they went extinct 1,000 years ago, you'd think they'd get messed up. So in 1648, Anto de Falcourt became a French governor of Madagascar and wrote in the Histoire des les Grandes Islands de Madagascar, basically roughly translate, a history of Madagascar Island.
Okay.
About hearing stories of the Malagasy from the Malagasy about an animal called the Moragras, which closely resembled a hippopotamus. So when they were drawing it, talking about it, it looked like a hippo.
Mm-hmm.
He knew what a hippo looked like. He'd been through Africa. Keep in mind, these people that live in Madagascar, they're hundreds of miles, 250 miles away
right.
from Africa. They don't know what a hippo looks like from the mainland.
Right.
But yeah, closely resembled a hippo. In different regions of Madagascar, stories were recorded of a Tas Ombi Ombi, or the Ombi Rono.
What's that?
Which is all animals basically representing a hippo.
Oh.
So as they traveled around the island, all these tribes had new unique names. But when they would draw or describe the animal, they were describing hippos.
Yeah.
And all animals that resembled hippopotamus, but only a few other animals were on the island. In 1902, a colonel administrator named Raybird assessed that stories he had heard of the Highlands could only possibly be hippos still living in the late 1800s. So, in the up in the highlands of these mountains, they were still talking and getting stories from the tribes and people. And we've talked about Madagascar, how half of it is so remote and nobody goes there.
I was going to mention that when talking about this, because just like you, I think it's the east side, right? On the other side of the mountains where nobody lives.
Yeah. Yeah. There's people. There are tribes there. But there is no,
there's
no European contact. Correct. Or extremely, extremely limited. That's where like the man-eating trees and all that comes from.
There's not technology there, basically.
Yeah.
Like modern cities.
I do think you can go around the edge of the whole island,
mm-hmm.
but there's valleys. There's whole valleys and ancient forests.
Just remote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in the 1990s, Bernie, who was studying recent extinctions in Madagascar, collected tales about a creature called the Kilo. Pilo, Pito, Sofa, that has been described by villagers in the town of Belosurami, a small fishing village on the west coast. Several villagers independently described an animal that, as recently as 1976, had entered their village, was about the size of a cow, had very dark pigment, grunted a lot, and when threatened, fled to the water.
Like a hippo.
Yes. No known animal in Madagascar fits this description, but the animals seemed remarkably hippo-like.
Mm.
Yeah, they were just telling, one time we had this thing walk into the village.
Yeah.
And when we kind of went up near it, it ran to the water and swam away.
And that was a fishing village where there's people, mm-hmm. you know, so if these things were hunted or like just everything else on this list, they're going to avoid people.
Yeah, so these guys, elusive. I just don't think these in European settlement in Madagascar came in very much contact.
Right, yeah.
Because these were highland animals.
Okay.
They do go to the river for protection. They are semi-aquatic, but they spend much, much, much more of their time in forest habitat.
Mm-hmm.
One man in a village accurately mimicked the sound of many animals, and he would imitate this animal. He made noises extremely similar to that of a hippo. Even though he had never left the island and said he'd never seen or heard of what an African hippo was.
Somebody knew what the sounds
were. Yeah, he was doing the hippo grunts, the famous sound.
Yeah.
And he claimed that he had never left or heard or knows what an African hippo was. When shown pictures, others also identified hippopotamus-like animals, but they said with larger ears. Several described the creature's last appearance in 1976.
It's not that long ago.
Bernie was reluctant to publish his study for fear of being labeled a...
Oh, crazy man.
Cryptozoologist.
Oh, okay. Same thing.
But eventually published the results in American Anthropology. Bernie concluded that while the villagers had possibly encountered the Malagasy hippos, it was also possible that stories were inaccurate, a combination of misidentified animals, old folk tales, and the information of villagers that gathered from modern paleontology.
I tend to believe the local indigenous people, like with hundreds of years of history, yes.
They live there.
Rather than the guy that just dropped on a plane and visited for a week.
They're rare. They're like, they're rare, but if you go up in the mountains, they're there.
I don't know. I've been here a week and I had never seen one. Not real.
That's
how I feel about people when they talk about Bigfoot and they've been hunting their whole lives. Never seen one. It's not real.
It's like okapis. Famous hiders. A zebra giraffe.
Right.
Crazy animal. 1990s.
First time
I think they were in captivity.
Gotcha.
But, literally the local said that's the Valley of Giraffes.
Right.
The forest down there, that's a Valley of Giraffes. Giraffes live
No.
Giraffes don't live in forest.
Right, yeah.
And they go down there, and they're really good hiders.
Like, oh.
So I do think that one of the three species is still in modern-day Madagascar.
I would think so, too.
They weren't giant herd animals. They had bloats. They're called bloats, I think, or floats. I can't remember.
What their
herd name.
Okay.
Group of them.
Multiple, yeah.
Not like African hippos where they'd have hundreds of individuals in an area, but they'd still have some groups. But I think most of the time they were independently either like mother and calf or maybe even small family units going through the forest feeding. So unlike the African hippo, which mostly feeds on grasses, these guys had a wide range of diets.
Omnivorous?
They weren't omnivorous, no.
Oh, okay.
But plants they could eat.
So
they were still herbivores.
Herbivores.
But where, the African hippo is pretty much just exclusively eating grass.
Right.
These guys were eating everything. All the plants.
Garbage disposals.
Yeah, anything they get. But they're much smaller. About the size of a cow.
Well, you can't navigate, the forests and the valleys and the mountains.
4,000 pounds.
Yeah.
Rather 400 pounds makes it easier.
You gotta adapt to the niche you're in.
I didn't even get through half of them.
No, this could be a part two.
That's our second one for today.
Oh,
recordings.
Nice. All right.
So we'll do part two. But the next one's very fascinating for me. So when we come back to this, maybe I'll give you a... Should I give him a hint?
Ooh, a little foreshadowing?
Mm-hmm.
I don't care.
It's an ostrich.
Oh, there's your hint. Oh, well, we had the...
But, like, as in the Malagasy hippo is a hippo.
Oh, okay, fair enough. So there's... Okay.
It's not just an ostrich. Gotcha. There's a lot of specialness with it.
So we covered the grizzly bear of Mexico, the shoe built... No, no, that was wrong show. The grizzly bear of Mexico.
We talked about the stellar sea cow.
That was
the trilocene.
Quick.
I mean, just talking about the hippo, the monk seal,
and the ivory-billed woodpecker. I think they're all three of them, being the grizzly, the woodpecker, and the sea monk or whatever monk seal. I think they're all still there. And what was this last one again?
The hippo.
The hippo, duh.
For me personally, I know, well, obviously the ivory billed woodpecker got proven.
Right.
Whether the DNR accepts it or not, they're there. They were proven to exist. So to me, the most likely two, the monk seal I could see being gone just because how bad the whaling and oil industry was.
Yeah.
They wiped out like whole species of elephant seal and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Elephant seal. I mean, big aggressive seals.
Yeah.
These guys were not aggressive. You know, they were docile towards people.
Yeah.
The couple in zoos were famous because they did tricks and all that stuff. I could see them being extinct, but I really do think that some version of the Malagasy hippo, one of the three species, is out there.
I think so too.
I do think the grizzly bear is out there. And the ivory-billed woodpecker, whether the DNR approves it or not, is out there.
I think they're all four made it. Yeah. I think they're all four still hanging on.
So this is what happens. This is how you make a cryptid after about 100 years. Like, if you didn't know, there's a hippo out there. Like, the people in Madagascar.
Yeah.
You know, there's probably so few of them, or they're so secretive, that they are a monster in folklore and legend.
Yeah.
You know? Or not even a monster. That's not the correct term.
But, I mean, could be perceived as a monster.
A mythical creature, as in that it's real into their culture.
Right.
But it's extremely rare.
Right. So can become a monster in your mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've been the great and powerful mystery.
And I've been Jay Clone with a hint of salt and garlic seasoning.
We'll catch you next week, guys.
Bye. Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the Jay Clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye! Bye.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.